You are listening to the testimony of Galvin Lewis. For more information, please visit danieljfriend.com/the testimony. Previously on the testimony.
To reject the hypercube is to reject one's own humanity. And though it has been torn down or destroyed in a sense, it can be restored.
And how am I supposed to help him with that?
Do your best to train him up as you would a stubborn child who has not learned his manners.
Who are you?
Who are you?
Roy Hannay.
Someone sent me here? It was a man in gray.
An old fellow? With a gray suit and a gray fedora?
Yes.
Good to see you again, Mr. Knobs.
How have things been back in Auckland since last time I saw you?
Quite well. We've already placed our initial shipment in transit to Los Angeles in good faith.
Hold on a moment.
We've received intelligence that she is listening in on our conversation as we speak.
Great. Now we'll never know what they'll say because we have to get out of here ASAP.
Take good care of him for me. He'll be coming back to me soon.
Just give me the money.
We've been waiting for a new year's worth of funding to come in, but it hasn't been approved yet. I've been informed that a compromise is on its way soon.
Roy brought Penny and August to his home in the suburbs. They reasoned that because Rorwood did not appear to be aware of Roy's investigation, and that since they had discarded Penny's scroll, the HHS would not know to look for them there. All the same, out of precaution, he had the two stay in an unattached but furnished garage. Roy carried August on his shoulder, kicked the door open, and laid the man down on a couch. He told Penny to make herself at home and take the bed on an overlooking loft while he went to grab something to help with the pain in August's leg. A minute later, Roy returned with a needle, a small medical bottle, and a bandage. August sat on the couch, rocking back and forth with his arms held onto his left leg. Roy had Penny hold August down while he rolled up the pant on August's left side.
What are you going to give him? A painkiller?
No. Getting rid of the pain without addressing the real problem won't accomplish any good. I'm giving him a dose of Adderide Fostanine. If he's already seen a doctor for it, they probably gave him an injection already. But a second round can't hurt. It will speed up the process for his bones to heal.
Roy filled the needle with some of the liquid. With his hand free, he pressed down on the leg in different places until August let out a loud scream. Roy injected the dose into the place that was sensitive. Once the needle was empty, Roy pulled it out and quickly wrapped his leg with a bandage.
The drug also includes a sedative, so you should be able to let go.
August stopped struggling against Penny and closed his eyes.
There it is.
And I thought you were a journalist, not a doctor.
I was a medic in the army once upon a time.
That must have been hard.
Not really.
Roy walked over to a metal trash can and tossed away the needle.
I was in field hospitals the whole time and never had to see any of this action.
But I'm sure you saw plenty of troops in traumatic shape. That can't be easy.
You're right.
Roy sat down on a couch opposite Penny.
But seeing so much pain taught me a lot about humanity.
Like what?
Pain is a funny thing. We all want it to go away. Many of the soldiers who became seriously injured gave up, and all they wanted was morphine to null the hurt. And on a broader scale, I think of all the students at home calling for peace to end the pain that the world was experiencing. But both those soldiers and those students failed to see that pain is a blessing because it shows us that something else is wrong. You could give a man all the morphine in the world or have the whole army throw down their guns, and it might make things seem swell right away, but that wouldn't solve the real problem. The soldier would continue to bleed internally, and tyrants would continue to oppress.
Penny looked at August.
Like his leg. It would continue to be broken.
Yes, like his leg. And like I'm willing to bet, whatever it is that Rorwood is scheming with the PRP. The world's worst policies are driven by a desire to eradicate pain at the expense of liberty, and the neo-communists advocate it the most.
But we're no closer to proving that they're working together.
There is one thing we learned. A shipment of Uberman devices is in transit to Los Angeles.
From the sound of it, we're not going to find a clear connection to the MacArthur violation there. Even if there's a paper trail, I'm sure it ends with a shell company in New Zealand or Japan.
Roy shrugged his shoulders.
You're probably right. Investigations like this always take some time, but we have to keep digging a little further. Though, there is another lead that you might be able to follow.
He leaned over the coffee table at the center of the couches and picked up a pen and a notepad. He flipped to a blank page, scribbled something down, and showed the pad to Penny.
Do you recognize this?
Penny looked closely at the drawing, which appeared to be like someone took the letter I and about two-thirds up put a third horizontal line in it that was a little longer than the serifs at the top and bottom.
I've never seen that before in my life. Why do you ask?
Roy leaned back in his chair and scratched his stubble.
The same man in gray who told you to go to my hotel room showed it to me.
You've used an Uberman device?
No.
So you've met the man in gray in person?
I've never liked to divulge my sources, but this time it's for a different reason. Quite frankly, it's rather embarrassing.
What do you mean?
I met the man in gray in a dream.
Penny raised an eyebrow.
How did you...
Trust him? I didn't at first. I was skeptical and thought that my mind was playing too many tricks on me and that I needed a break from work. The man in gray was the one who gave me the tip about the connection between Rorwood and the PRP. To prove it, he told me about one of the first meetings they had at the MacArthur Hotel.
But how did you find out that it wasn't a regular business trip?
I still don't have any tangible proof that it wasn't sanctioned, but the meeting happened exactly when and where he told me it would. So my gut tells me that he was telling the truth, whoever he is and however he came into my mind.
And he looked down at the drawing again.
And where does that come in?
I thought that you would know. He showed it to me and said that it would be important.
But why would he say that I would know what it means?
He never mentioned you, specifically.
Roy glanced at August, who was sound asleep.
He said to be on the lookout for a man who believed he was the master of his fate and on his way to Texas.
Texas?
That's what he said.
He only told me to come here. He didn't mention anything about Texas.
Maybe you're supposed to go there.
Did he give you any more specific place other than Texas?
Nope.
Why can't this be easy?
I'll let you take my pickup.
Roy pointed to the 40-year-old Chevy sitting on the other side of the garage.
But you have to promise that I'll be the first interview you do when this is all said and done.
Are you going to come with us?
Roy shook his head.
It's better if I don't. Ideally, Rorwood and his goons will never even know that we met.
You're probably right. In that case, it sounds like a deal. You'll have first dibs on an interview.
August swam across the sea for infinity, stroke after stroke until his hand ran into something solid. He stopped paddling and felt it with his other hand. Although the flood went on for a few more fathoms before the hill broke out, August was in shallow waters.
Forget your foregone conclusions. Settle in, settle now. Give up your sweet illusions. 'Cause your walls are falling down.
He stood up on the ground that his hands had felt and began walking through the waist-deep water toward the knoll. A figure emerged on the other side, though, and August paused in his tracks. At a closer look, he could see that it was the lion.
Oh, is it good to see another living thing?
The beast walked up to the edge of the dry ground, and August began running toward it. As it came within a few yards of the animal, it let out a beastly roar. August paused.
Hey, it's okay.
He held out a hand. Large cat sniffed the air. August's hand inched closer until it could touch the mane, but that was too close. The beastly devil took hold of his arm with his ghastly teeth before he fainted at the excruciating clutch.
And you think strong, but boy, you're wrong. River gonna run you down. River gonna run you down.
Rorwood stared at the skyline of Nashville from his high-floor hotel room. At the edge of the window wall, the vibrant lights of the city below shone around him to form a perfect silhouette of the enigmatic man. What dark thoughts might have been going through his head is anyone's guess, but at any rate, they didn't go uninterrupted for long. A scroll resting on an otherwise empty table in the room lit up and began to ring. Without so much as a glance, Rorwood stretched out his arms and pulled the blackout curtains together. He stepped to the table and tapped the button to answer the call.
Good evening, Mr. Controller. I was wondering when you might check in.
How did the meeting go?
The voice was encrypted. It was as robotic and unnatural as a green light that radiated from the scroll to brighten the otherwise pitch-black room.
As good as can be expected, Mr. Knobs was unhappy that I couldn't pay him at the moment, but he has already made a good faith shipment of the devices.
Did you tell him that you will be able to make the payment at a later date? Remember that we must remain on the best possible terms with our allies across the Pacific.
Of course. I told him that we were expecting Congress to reach a compromise soon and that I would likely maintain our current funding levels and that we would be able to wire a payment to him as soon as we possibly could.
What compromise?
I assumed you knew. We've been told that the Federalists are willing to keep the budget the same as long as most of the agencies are restructured to be placed under the legislative branch.
Why didn't you tell this to me earlier? This is not acceptable. This sort of arrangement could compromise our entire plan.
Mr. Controller, with all due respect,
that means you have none.
I was under the impression that funding was our top priority. If the budget is wiped, then so is the Uberman project.
You think I need you to complete the project? You and the HHS are expendable. Your agency was the most convenient route for the project to take hold, but you are an imbecile if you think that is the only agency I can control. The cost of losing you is nothing compared to the cost of having every jot and tittle scrutinized by lawmakers.
I apologize, Mr. Controller. I'll do what I can to persuade our friends in the Senate to abandon the deal.
Rorwood squeezed his eyes.
Yes, Mr. Controller.
Why the hesitation?
I saw what could happen, but I think it's avoidable.
What did the Tesseract show you?
Nothing that needs worrying. It appears that someone in my department is deciding to bite the hand that feeds him. But now I know what's coming. I'm sure it will be simple to avoid it.
Are you sure? Have you ever seen something with the Tesseract that has not come to pass?
Well, no, but I've never needed to change anything before.
Very well. Just remember, no matter what happens, whether you succeed or screw up, you are expendable.
Rorwood straightened his back and tilted his nose down toward the screen.
With all due respect, and by that I mean none, I am the one who has mastered the Tesseract, not you. You may be in a position of greater power than me right now, and we may share the same vision for the future, but make no mistake, I can just as well make that happen with or without you.
You're treading on thin ice, Weston. Don't fall in.
I'll keep you updated on the status of the project.
Rorwood hung up on the controller, and then tapped the screen to call someone else.
Good evening, Secretary.
I'm gonna need you to take a trip to Texas soon.
Have Penny and August been located there?
That's where they're headed. I want you to try to bring them in if you can, but that's not the main reason why I'm sending you.
What's the purpose?
Someone else.
Penny pulled the pickup into the lot of an ancient diner. Europe may be known for its age-old, exquisite architecture, but it's incomparable to the standalone 20th-century buildings in East Texas that haven't been significantly altered since their first slabs of concrete were poured. Inside, a waitress, who was probably there to serve the restaurant's first stack of all-you-can-eat pancakes with a side of scrambled eggs and fat, juicy bacon, ushered Penny and August to a small booth. Penny helped August get situated on the bench, and then slid herself onto the tattered cushion on the other side. Waitress handed them some coffee-stained menus, and left them to look the options over. Penny pushed one toward August.
Is there something on there that you'd like?
August glanced at the menu, and shrugged his shoulders.
You need to eat.
He looked at it without moving his eyes. Penny rolled her eyes and picked up her own menu. The waitress came back and set two cups of coffee down on the table. Seeing August stare at the menu, she turned to Penny.
What can I get you, darling?
Penny picked up her menu.
Could I have the...
She paused and traced August's stare down to his menu.
Actually, we'll have two of your chicken fried steak platters.
And for your sides?
Whatever you recommend.
Two sides of fried okra coming up.
Perfect.
While they waited for their meal to be served, a couple with two young children came into the restaurant. The waitress escorted them to a booth behind Penny. As they walked by, the little girl spied on August, who didn't move his eye from where the menu had been.
What's wrong with him, Mommy?
Penny did her best to not make any reactions, but she kicked August's leg under the table. He didn't flinch a muscle.
Honey, you need to mind your own business.
Penny sat awkwardly in silence until the server finally brought out the two plates of steaming hot southern dinners. August's eyes didn't move an inch. He stared at the same spot, lost somewhere in his mind the world around him.
Come on, you need to eat something. You can't go on just drinking water.
He paid no attention. She reached the utensils on the other side of the table, grabbed a fork, and forced it into August's hands. She wrapped his fingers around the handle and then let go. It stayed for a moment, but then, without turning his head at all, August released the piece of silverware from his hand and let it fall to the table. Penny cringed at the racket. She turned to see if anyone was paying attention, but they weren't. The family behind her was discussing the menu, trying to decide what to order.
I want the chicken fingers.
You always get the chicken fingers.
That's because they're good.
It's okay. Timmy can get what he wants and so can you.
But I wanted the chicken fingers.
Don't worry, they have plenty for both of you. Dave, what are you going to order?
I got my eye on the country fried steak. Haven't had that for a while.
Penny looked down at the plate in front of August. He hadn't touched it. She turned around to the table behind her.
I'm sorry, I couldn't help but overhear your conversation. Would you like my plate of chicken fried steak? I ordered one for him, but he doesn't seem like he wants to eat.
Well...
He hasn't touched it at all. And I'll still pay for it. I just don't want it to go to waste.
That would be mighty kind of you.
That's so sweet of you. Are you sure about that? Can we order something else for you that he might be more inclined to eat?
Penny glanced at August. He still hadn't moved.
I don't think so. He'll eat when he's ready.
She picked up the untouched plate of food and handed it across the booth.
Are you sure there's nothing we can do? No, thank you. I'm quite...
The woman's shirt caught her eye.
What is that symbol on your shirt?
The mother looked down at the t-shirt she was wearing. It was tan with a logo on it in the shape of what Roy had shown to Penny. The image on the shirt was a little more detailed, though, and you could clearly see that there was a black letter I overlaid atop a brown cross.
Oh, this is from Crossway Bible Camp. We go there every year with our church. Have you been before? Not that I can recall, but I have seen that logo before. Where's the camp at? Somerville Lake, pretty close to College Station.
Penny nodded her head.
It seems familiar, but I don't recall ever being out there. In case of deja vu, I suppose.
If you ever get the chance, you should pay it a visit. It's quite a beautiful place.
The water slide is the best. No. I like the horses.
Penny smiled.
I'll need to check it out sometime. When you do, be sure to tell the Ambroses that Dave and Teresa Smith say hello.
August lifted his head up at the mention of the Ambroses.
I'll be sure to do that.
The waitress returned to take the family's order, and besides the two plates of chicken fingers and a salad for the mother, they quietly insisted that they would pay for both of the country fried steaks. Penny was surprised by their generosity, but gratefully accepted their help. When she returned to their hotel after dinner, Penny wasted no time in using the old complimentary computer to search for the camp. In just a little over 5 hours, it was still a bit of a drive, but at least she knew the destination.
Hello, this is Daniel Friend, the writer and producer of The Testimony of Calvin Lewis. If you are enjoying this story and would like to help it succeed, please be sure to subscribe for new episodes, Rate this show so that more people see it, follow us on Twitter or Facebook to stay up to date, and be on the lookout for the publication of the novel in fall 2022.